From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Israelis go to the polls on Tuesday for a vote that will determine the country's new ruling party, its prime minister, and much about the forward path of the Middle East. A whopping 28 parties are running candidates, and many Israelis are still undecided about how they will vote, reflecting widespread frustration over a bloody deadlock with the Palestinians and boiling domestic disputes. 2 years after Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, the Likud party leader, took office, the Intifada is still raging. Hundreds of Israelis and many more Palestinians have died. Peace remains a distant hope, and some days not even that. When Sharon's coalition broke apart this fall over a dispute with the Labor Party over spending on Israeli settlements in the West Bank and Gaza, Israel was forced to call new elections. Now, top contenders are Likud, Labor, and the new media darling, Shinui, a party pushing back against the rising power in Israel of ultra-Orthodox Jews. Tonight on Point, Israel at the ballot box. Where is the vision to lead Israel and the world out of the raging conflict with the Palestinians? Do you respond to the strong arm of Likud or the negotiate now stance of Labor? Can you imagine being certain about how to vote amidst so much killing and fear? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be hearing tonight from representatives of three of Israel's biggest parties, Likud, Labor, and Shinui, to get their take on what's at stake for Israel and the world in these elections. But we begin with veteran Israeli political observer Yaron Dakel, Washington bureau chief of Israeli TV Channel 1, one of Israel's two largest television broadcasters. Good evening and welcome to On Point, Yaron Dakel.
Thank you very much, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I guess it'd be great if you could, for starters, just bring us up to date on what the polls, to the extent that we can trust them, are saying right now about Likud, Labor, and the probable outcome of next Tuesday's vote. How does it look?
Well, the last polls show that the Likud party is leading by 10 points, and the out of 120 seats in the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, Likud gets around 32, 33 seats, and Labor is around 20 to 22 seats. It seems likely that the current prime minister, the acting prime minister, Ariel Sharon, will be re-elected as the head of the largest party. And according to the Israeli political system, he has to form a coalition government, having more than 61 supporters out of 120 in the Israeli parliament. I think in the few days to come, it seems unlikely that the Labour Party chairman, the new chairman elected a few weeks ago, will be the next prime minister of Israel.
So, all likelihood, Ariel Sharon will continue as prime minister. Labour has said that it will not return to a unity government. It remains to be seen whether or not they stick with that, but Amram Mitzna has said they won't. If they don't, what is the likely coalition face that will emerge on the other side of a Sharon-Likud victory?
I would say that the main goal of the prime minister was and still trying to form a national unity government with the Labour Party, despite of all what they said during the campaign. Now, in election campaign, we should know, and it's not just an Israeli phenomenon, that sometimes people say one thing during the campaign and they change their mind after the campaign is over.
Oh, really? We Americans have no experience with that.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Now, I would think that Mitzna will try to stick to his word, not break his own credibility. But we should remember that the prime minister, if he is reelected, has a power to try to manipulate the public opinion, try to manipulate the media. And if there is a war in Iraq with some possible effects on Israel, like we remember in 1991, that will be one of the factors which the public opinion will shift toward a national unity government. And Labour Party activists and ex-ministers will also try to push Mitzna into a national unity government under Mr. Sharon.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but we've got to bring something in here before we get to our break. We're going to be hearing tonight from Labour, Likud, and Shinui. representatives. And I want to get this piece of tape in, recorded earlier today in a phone call to Israel, with Ranan Gissin. He's a senior advisor to Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, a former spokesman for the Israeli Defense Forces. I'm going to get you to comment on this, Yaron, in just a moment. But if we could listen first, I asked Ranan Gissin to describe the top issue likely to decide Likud's showing in the election.
Well, I think it's not the top issue of Likud. It's a top issue that Israel faces, and it's been facing that for the past 27 months, mainly security, of terrorism. We find ourselves in a war of terrorism that was imposed on us 27 months ago. A bleeding democracy we have become in the past 27 months. 721 men, women, and children, innocent men, women, and children, were slaughtered, killed. Whole families were wiped out. You know, this is the equivalent of the United States losing maybe 40,000 men and women in a period of 2 years. So that main issue lies very heavily on people's minds and the people's everyday life, more so than any other residual issue that may come up, scandals like in any other democracy, even the economic issue. We're in a very difficult economic bind.
Mm-hmm.
But people, first and foremost, want peace and quiet. We extended a hand to peace, and the hand was rejected. Not only rejected, but, you know, a complete deception of the partners of peace who, instead of giving us peace of the brave, as Arafat promised, gave us peace of the grave.
And yet, of course, in the years of Prime Minister Sharon's rule, that peace has been elusive. There's been an awful lot of fighting and an awful lot of death. And as
but it started way before. The war of terrorism that was imposed on us, the mm-hmm. coalition of terror and the strategy of terror adopted by Yasser Arafat, started before September 2000. It started the minute Arafat realized that he can't get everything that he wants around the negotiating table. He resorted back to violence and terrorism.
Dr. Gissin, let me ask you about these poll findings that indicate that many Israelis would like to see separation from the Palestinians, and they're prepared to give up some or most of the settlements to do that. Sounds like the Labor platform, and yet Likud is leading in the polls. Why?
Look, the one thing that Prime Minister Sharon enjoys, both here as well as abroad, is credibility. And when he says, against the better judgment of some of his proponents in the party, that eventually, if all conditions are fulfilled, he will vote for recognizing a Palestinian state, a demilitarized Palestinian state, as it may be, and losing his majority, he did it. He did it before the elections. We're in the darkness. We're in a great deal of uncertainty. The gathering clouds of war in Iraq, the war of terrorism, which has taken such a heavy toll, the dire economic conditions. So like children in the darkness, you know, people tend to latch to someone they can trust, someone that they believe can lead them. You look at the gallery of leaders today, and the only one who can really do the job, in other words, lead under fire, is this man who has 28 experience in the military and 28 years of experience in politics.
And the flip side, then, of that perspective is the question that lingers in some minds. Ariel Sharon can certainly lead Israel in being tough and in cracking down, but can he lead Israel and the Palestinians to peace? We read that what's really going on here is a move away from a two-state solution and ultimately a kind of, no one knows, an annexation, an expelling of Palestinians, some kind of system in which Palestinians live perpetually under Israeli oversight. How do you avoid those solutions?
Now, look, we don't want to occupy 3.5 million Palestinians, but peace of appeasement is not going to bring peace. Most Israelis had that bitter experience. One of the main reasons that the whole political system swayed to the right is because of this disillusionment of the road to peace that we took in the first place. Look, Israel is a democracy. It's a bleeding democracy. Today, the major issue is what road to pursue in order to reach real peace. There's a long and arduous process, by the way, coordinated with the United States, that we see how we can reach the two-state solution. And it's understood today, I think it's understood in the United States, it's understood in Israel, that with this wave of radical Islamic terrorism, it's clear that if you really want real peace, first you have to eradicate terrorism.
Can you achieve that two-state solution without pulling back Israeli settlements that are now in the West Bank and Gaza?
The settlements are not the main issue. Dealing with a settlement can come about once there is a complete cessation of terrorism, once there is a leadership, a partner on the other side that is willing to talk peace. Arafat does not talk peace. Arafat keeps making promises to the world. In a sense, he's a smaller, reduced version of Saddam Hussein. Deception, deceit, non-compliance, trying to deceive the world that he's working for peace, and at the same time, diligently working to build a coalition of terror, spread a network of terrorist activity which is tied to Iran, to Iraq, to Hezbollah. You can't fool all the people all the time, and definitely not the world after 9/11.
And when you look at the corruption charges that Ariel Sharon faced in the last few weeks, is it the same issue?
Let's put this in the proper perspective. All democracies have been infected by these scandals, and usually these scandals come about right very close to election. That should be put in the proper perspective. We're a country governed by law. There is the police. There are investigations. And the investigation will take its course. And if there's someone that should be indicted, then he would be indicted. But the real critical issue is not an issue of reforming the political system. That will come later. If there is a broad-based government of national unity, then we can reform the system. But right now, what we need to reform is to reform the way of life of the Palestinian or their leadership who continues to espouse terrorism.
And domestically in Israel, we see the Shinui Party tapping into this deep-seated anger among some secular Israelis at the ultra-Orthodox and what's described as religious coercion. How serious a problem does Likud see that as being? Does Likud have plans to address it?
But look, Israel is a country with 10,000 problems. That's true. But it's a democracy. It shows that democracies can survive even under fire, even when there are issues that are debated inside the society. But first thing must come first. And first, we have to stabilize the situation. We have to make certain that we can deal with the threats that are facing us and offer a real chance for peace for those Palestinians who really want to make peace and oust those who don't want to make peace. There is a need for a regime change first. The other problems that we have can be dealt with, but for that, Sharon must win big. In other words, Likud must be strong. There must be a broad-based government.
What are you projecting at this point in terms of seats likely to be won by the Likud next Tuesday?
Well, you know, particularly in Israel, and particularly after the destruction of the Second Temple, prophecy was given to the fool. So I don't think I can give you an estimate. But I would say that the Likud will gain, in my view, as it seems today, above 32 seats. There may be a problem at the beginning, you know, of establishing a government of national unity, but I think the prime minister will put most of its effort into it. And then again, you know, external forces or external winds, as I call it, the gathering storm of war against Iraq and the changing strategic landscape that may come about if the United States decides to go to war may have a major effect on the perceptions of people and on the perception of parties. And maybe that eventually will bring about that kind of government that can pull us out of this predicament.
Dr. Ronan Gissin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Likud Representative Ronan Gissin, senior advisor to Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, spoke with me earlier today from Herzliya, Israel. Yaron Dekel joining us tonight. He's with the Israeli TV Channel 1 and a highly respected political analyst in Israel of all things Israeli political. Yaron, help us through all that. Is that a message? You heard it right along with us in your great support for listening through. Is that the same kind of message that the Sharon party, the Likud party, is giving to Israelis, that the Israelis are children in darkness? Sharon's the only one who can lead under fire. Is that what they're hearing as well? And is it a winning message?
Look, Sharon promised 2 years ago peace and security for the people of Israel, and he doesn't repeat this message anymore. He promises a continuous struggle against the Palestinians till the victory of the people of Israel. Yeah. The fact is Sharon government has failed in trying to fulfill this promise of peace and security after 2 years of bloodshed in the region. The question is, of course, why is Sharon so popular if this is the outcome of the 2 years under his leadership?
And why?
I think first of all, he occupies the center of the political arena in Israel. And once you occupy the center, it's very difficult to move you out of there. And the other thing is, Labour Party chairmen were always chairmen. The last two chairmen who were elected to be prime ministers of Israel, late Mr. Rabin and Mr. Barak, they both had an image of hardliners pre-elections. It doesn't matter what they did at the end, but pre-elections, Mr. Rabin was the hardliner as a minister of defense in the first intifada, first uprising at the late 80s, and Mr. Barak was the retired army chief of staff. And Mitzna has a dovish image when the public opinion in Israel has had a major shift in the last 2 years towards the right. It seems unlikely that a dovish Labour Party chairman will be elected to the Prime Minister of Israel after 2 years of intifada.
We have a lot to talk about tonight with Israel's elections coming up next Tuesday. My guest is Yaron Dekel with Israeli TV TV, Channel 1. You can join us as well, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the impending elections in Israel and the search there for a way ahead. My guest tonight is Yaron Dekel. He's Washington bureau chief of Israeli TV Channel 1, one of Israel's two largest television broadcasters and one of the most respected political analysts in Israel. He is listening along with you tonight as we hear from the three major political parties in Israel. There are 28 in all. We just heard from Likud before the break. We're going to be hearing from Labor in a moment and a bit later still with a smaller but important party, Shinui. Right now, let's listen to something from Labor. I spoke earlier today with Isaac Herzog. He's a Labor Party candidate for the Knesset. He was a cabinet secretary in Prime Minister Ehud Barak's government. He's son of the former Israeli President Chaim Herzog. I asked Isaac Herzog to describe the key issues that will determine Labor's showing in next Tuesday's elections.
Well, it's a variety of issues, but what we say to the Israeli public is that we propose a different agenda, and we propose a different road or track that the Israeli public needs to take. We come forward with two main messages. Number one, the current situation will lead to a deadlock, and we feel that the only way to move on is by enhancing the negotiations with the Palestinians, and if we don't find a partner, to take unilateral actions whereby we will redeploy some of our presence and evacuate outposts and settlements that are in the heartland of the Palestinian territories. And number two, we say that we've always known how to save the Israeli economy from recession. We've done it in the past, and we are continuing in the way Yitzhak Rabin has done it when he entered into government.
Mm. Isaac Herzog, if the polls can be believed, many Israelis agree with the Labor Party's agenda vis-a-vis the Palestinian conflict, to restart negotiations, withdraw from settlements, build a fence along the Green Line. And your candidate, Amram Mitzna, is highly regarded as a former general, mayor of Haifa. So why isn't Labor doing better in the polls?
Labor has lost the confidence of the voters on a number of issues. It seems that when it has joined the National Unity Government with Sharon, and that was done out of sheer responsibility, it lost its unique stature with the public and basically could not show to the public that it has any real advantages in the government. It was wiped out in the memory or note or the public's awareness, or that it really comes forward with any real achievement. And people said, if you already vote for the candidates, let's vote for Sharon. There's no difference. Now Labor says we intend to win the election, and if we don't, we intend to be a strong and staunch opposition to show that we have a different agenda and a different platform for the public.
Amram Mitzna has said that Labor will not join a unity government if Likud puts together a coalition, a winning coalition in this election. Where, in your view, Isaac Herzog, is the Likud taking Israel? And where is Israel headed if Likud dominates again after next week's election?
It's complicated to say because, after all, whoever takes over by democratic elections deserves my respect. So I'm not going to say out in the open, especially in the United States, what I say in a very as a very vehement opposition to Likud in Israel. But what we feel is that that not only Israel will move into a complete deadlock, the situation will only deteriorate. This is what we feel. And of course we assume that after the operation in Iraq or the efforts that are made in Iraq, the world's attention will focus on the Middle East, and Israel will have to come up with answers to enhance the peace process, in addition, of course, to fighting terrorism and initiating reforms in the Palestinian leadership.
Why would the Labor Party be better placed to answer those pressures, as you say, likely to follow war in Iraq? Why would Labor be better placed to respond to those pressures for new negotiations and moves toward peace than Likud?
Because Labor has always done it. Labor, if you look at the past 10 years, Yitzhak Rabin lost his life for pursuing peace. Shimon Peres and Ehud Barak have lost their leadership positions because of their pursuit of peace. We are determined. It is in our blood, as we say. We totally believe in it, that the best way and Israel's greatest interest is to separate itself from the Palestinian people and to hold a two-state solution, one Palestinian, one Israeli, under a peace agreement. That's why we want to pursue this process. That's why we feel it's essential for Israel's safety and security in the future.
If Israelis have in some large number lost confidence in the Labor Party, does it mean that they've in fact lost their nerve to go for that peace or lost the belief that it's possible to make that peace and keep Israel safe at the same time?
The Israeli public is a very smart and sophisticated public. And they look around and they see that the Israeli leadership has tried to pursue peace time and again. And because of waves of terrorism, the Israeli public is disenchanted with the possibility of a real partner in the peace process. But this does not derogate from the basic belief of the majority of the Israeli people that painful compromises need to be taken for peace.
Many left-wing Israelis, again, according to the polls, are planning to vote for Shinui and other smaller parties. Why isn't Labor succeeding in getting those votes? Does Labor have a solution to the secular religious conflict in Israel?
Labor has a solution for the secular religious conflict, but Labor is more of a compromising party. It's a ruling party. It covers lots of the various constituencies of Israel, and as such, it's not a confrontational party. Shinui is a confrontational party. Shinui is kind of a protest vote. And what we are trying to convince many Labor voters who have moved to Shinui is that it's basically an empty bubble that will disappear from the face of Israeli politics in the future, like many other central type parties in the past that were created for the sake of certain elections and then totally collapsed.
Isaac Herzog, as we let you go, how many seats are you now projecting Labor will take in Tuesday's voting?
Well, we are working and hopeful for 24, 25 seats, but one has to notice that there's a 20% undecided voters, so a lot of the results are very open still. What people need to remember is not the numbers of the seats per party, but rather per block, because then the president of Israel appoints the prime minister to form a coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we sincerely hope to come to a majority of the block so that we will be able to shift the political picture to our side.
Isaac Herzog, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Isaac Herzog is a Labor Party candidate for the Knesset. He spoke to us earlier from Tel Aviv. We are joined tonight by Yaron Dekel. He's Washington Bureau Chief of Israeli TV Channel 1 and a respected Israeli political analyst. We're talking with representatives of three leading parties in the elections, voting coming up next Tuesday in Israel. You can join us tonight as well. Where is the vision to pull Israel and the world beyond the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? Do you respond to the strong arm of Ariel Sharon's Likud Party or the negotiations now stand of the Labor Party? And as an American, can you imagine casting a calm, cool vote in the midst of so much killing and fear? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Yaron Dekel, again, you're patient and a great sport, but we've now heard there from both Likud and from Labor, Labor saying, we are the party that delivers on the promise to work for peace.
Yeah, but as I said before, I think Labor Party under Mr. Mitzna, who was the mayor of the city of Haifa,
yes,
is Labor Party is a bit too leftist for a right-wing Israeli people after 2 years of uprising from the Palestinian. We should know that after almost 700 Israeli killed, there is no feeling of resuming the talks with Yasser Arafat and none with other Palestinian leaders. So it seems to be unpopular now to take the position of Mr. Mitzna and the Labor Party under his leadership. And second thing I would say, I think that Labor Party pays the price of 2 years in Sharon's cabinet. Labor considered to be too similar to Mr. Sharon, and Mitzner's election is considered to be a cosmetic change, a change which was done a bit too late, just a few weeks ago. And to win the elections, I think you must serve in the opposition for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. I'm a great believer that candidates do not win, but their predecessors lose. That's why Mr. Sharon took power when Mr. Barak lost in a landslide mm-hmm. back in 2001 after Camp David summit here in the United States. Barak took office when Mr. Netanyahu lost, and Mr. Netanyahu was there when Mr. Peres lost. Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Mitzner doesn't be able to, it seems that he won't be able to take in this coming elections, because Sharon seems to be too popular and he's not going to lose. When the prime minister doesn't lose, the opposition must serve for a long time to be elected. That's Mr. Hetz was saying just a few minutes ago.
Yaron Dekel, describe for us, you say that Labor got too close to Likud. They're seen almost as peas in the same pot, and yet, if you listen to exactly what Amram Mitzner is saying, at least, he's proposing a very different path from what we hear from Ariel Sharon. He's proposing a resumption of negotiations. He's proposing a pullback, build up a wall at the Green Line, pull settlements out of the West Bank and Gaza. This is a very different message than Ariel Sharon's message. How is it playing or not playing?
Yeah, but it's a bit difficult to change your position overnight. I mean, after almost two years, when Labour Party ministers didn't really have an influence in Sharon's cabinet. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, there is a new guy in town, and he says things that they didn't say for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Now, it takes time to digest for the electorate such a change, and it can't come in 6 weeks pre-elections. And that's why I think Mr. Isaac Herzog was right, saying that they must serve for a long time in the opposition, trying to distinguish themselves from Sharon's cabinet if Sharon is not able to push them in. And I believe that he will try very hard to push Labour Party inside his cabinet after being re-elected next Tuesday, because otherwise Sharon might have a narrow right-wing government and he might be in the hands of the extremists like Mr. Netanyahu, who is now acting as the foreign minister, and like Mr. Lieberman, our Mr. Lieberman, mm-hmm. the Israeli Mr. Lieberman, who is the head of the Unity Party, the extreme right party, and the NRP, the National Religious Party. And I'm sure that Mr. Sharon doesn't want to be in the hands of the right-wing extremists, because once he moves towards the center or towards the left, they will try to bring the government down and mm-hmm. trying to maybe vote for Mr. Netanyahu to replace Mr. Sharon. He will feel much more comfortable with a national unity government when Mr. Peres might be his main PR around the globe, as Mr. Peres did successfully in the last 20 months. Mm.
Yaron Dekel, it's so difficult for most Americans to put themselves in the shoes of Israeli voters, especially today after this long period when Israelis have suffered so many horrible deaths at the hands of suicide bombers, terrorists. And yet we try and reach out and understand because in many different ways, Americans and America is fate and interests are tied to those of Israel. A couple of weeks ago, Tom Friedman, New York Times, did his kind of pre-summary of what's going on in the election. And he talked about a new math and said that the conflict there is entering what he called a terrible new phase. He said it's the beginning of the end of the two-state solution, that is, Israel and at its side a Palestinian state eventually. He's saying that the settlers, who Ariel Sharon has historically supported and appears to continue to support, are by their staying in the West Bank and Gaza, are making separation ultimately impossible. Then he goes on to say, if there is no separation, if there are no two states, he says by 2010, there will be more Palestinians than Jews living in Israel and the occupied territories taken together. Then Israel will have three options. The Israelis will control the whole area by what he calls apartheid, or they will control it by expelling Palestinians, or they will grant Palestinians the right to vote, and it will no longer be a Jewish state. Whichever way it goes, he says, that will mean the end of Israel as a Jewish democracy. Is this kind of calculus going on among the Israeli voting public? Are people thinking about the stakes in this election in this way, or is this just one American columnist speaking?
Well, you should know the Israelis talking about it, and I think Tom Friedman knows the Israeli very well, mm-hmm. since he was a correspondent in Jerusalem a long time. Mm-hmm. The Israelis at the moment, they struggle with day-to-day life. And they don't really think what could happen in 10 or 20 years. They think they should wake up in the morning, go to the work and come back. And they are not sure they will come back. And this is the main struggle and the main concern of the Israelis. Now, when they come back and there was no major terror attack inside Israel, they think of the economy, how they make their money. And the unemployment is going up and up and up. It's about around 10%. It's a real problem after the concern of the terror attack. So talking about that, and I appreciate what Tom Friedman writes in the New York Times. Mm. I think it's a bit too much for the Israelis at the moment. Now, I believe that as long as Yasser Arafat is the chairman of the Palestinians, there will be no deal with Mr. Sharon. Those two cannot make a deal together, unless the U.S. administration under President Bush will try to force them to. But there is no sign that the current administration wants to be involved too much, deeply involved in the Middle East conflict, when the head of the administration now focuses in Iraq. So I unfortunately think that, as one of the Secretary of State here said once, the parties haven't bled enough. That might be true for the current, unfortunately, for the current bloodshed in the Middle East between the Israelis and the Palestinians. I can't see any solution in the short term.
And the war, or potential war looming with Iraq, does it push Israeli voters toward Labor, toward Likud? How does that play out? Does it have an impact?
It doesn't have an impact. It might have an impact on the next coalition. If there is a war and if Scud missiles and Israel is attacked, as it was back in 1991, there might be a push towards a national unity government, because it's a feeling that we have to be united and the parties should be together to defend Israel from of the threat from outside. But it doesn't people do not calculate this when they come to the ballot on Tuesday next week. I think that it might have an influence at the end of the day, after the war, when the administration will make up his mind what it's going to do in the
next
Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
But first comes that election on Tuesday. We're talking tonight about elections in Israel and the search there for a way ahead. Can you imagine casting a calm, cool vote in the midst of so much killing and fear? Many Israelis feel their nation's survival is at stake. What are America's stakes in this vote? You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about elections in Israel. They're coming up on Tuesday, and the search there for a way ahead in very difficult times. You can join the conversation. Do you respond to the strong arm of Ariel Sharon's Likud party, or the negotiations now stand of Amram Mitzna's Labor Party? And many Israelis feel their nation's survival is at stake. What are America's stakes in this vote? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are lucky to be joined tonight from Washington, D.C. by Yaron Dekel, Washington Bureau Chief of Israeli TV Channel 1, helping us sort through the parties. We've heard tonight from Likud, from Labor. We're going to hear in a moment from the Shinui Party. But Yaron Dekel, describe for us what this party is about. Many Americans are not so familiar with the tension between secular Israelis and ultra-Orthodox Jewish Israelis. Why is there that tension, and where does Shinui stand today?
Well, the tension is traditionally, I think since the State of Israel was formed back in 1948, and the dispute is mainly, one of the examples is mainly about service in the army, which is a mandatory in Israel, but the religious ultra-Orthodox are getting a permission not to serve, not for men 3 years, not for women 2 years service in the army. And it's the Shinui phenomenon, Shinui, which means change in English. It's the big surprise of the coming elections, because according to the polls, now Shinui in the last, in the parliament, with the outgoing parliament is has only 6 seats,
right?
And it according to the last poll, it doubles or triples its power, between 14 seats to 17 seats,
which brings it very close to Labor's own standing
exactly
potential. And this in a party that wants to push back against the influence within Israel of the
religious
Orthodox
with the ultra Orthodox. They want to replace the ultra Orthodox, who had a major role in the last few governments of Israel, either left wing or right wing parties. But I think that the Shinui, which has a main factor in its agenda, it's kind of a hatred to ultra Orthodox parties and ultra-Orthodox people, it represent the protest of the Israelis who are exhausted from the Labor and the Likud party and from all the rest, and instead of staying home, which traditionally, you know, the turnout in Israel is very high, it's around 80% of the population of the electorate, they go and vote Shinui as a protest, because Shinui says something else.
Something
new. Don't
forget
that something new, and don't forget that the question of ultra-Orthodox and the secular, the dispute is not on the table at the moment. We have other things we deal with, but the protest brings them to double and triple their power and become the third party, probably the third party in the Israeli Knesset.
It's very impressive. If you'll listen with me for a moment, we have an interview here we did earlier today with Yehudit Naot. She's a member of the Shinui Party in the Knesset. She's a professor on the Faculty of Medicine at Technikon, the Israeli Institute of Technology. I asked Yehudit Naot to describe the kinds of voters Shinui is attracting.
The most pronounced group of people are young people in Israel, who are serving in the army, who are looking for a liberal and democratic state, a Zionistic state, with views of pluralism with regard to religion.
And those people are swelling your ranks. Give us, many Americans may not be familiar with the social structure in Israel, with the complaint that Shinui is raising about the growing power of the ultra-Orthodox. What is your party's critique of the ultra-Orthodox, of their impact on Israeli society, the impact of the power that this group is wielding in government and cultural life?
There is a debate in Israel between several groups of Judaism. I would say there are Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox, conservative and reform, and also secular Jews who believe each in their freedom of belief. And there is a debate in the Israeli society with regard whether Israel should be dominated by the ultra-Orthodox Jews, or whether there is the freedom of each person, I would say, to live his life according to his personal wishes. And Shinui offers pluralism in this regard.
What are you seeing in Israeli society today that has brought members to Shinui, or voters to Shinui? What are the actual manifestations of Orthodox religious practice that are bothering your voters?
First of all, we are opposing religious coercion. We really believe that there should be a separation between religion and the government, and that the government should not fund the ultra-Orthodox groups in the Israeli society in terms that they are not serving in the army. And we believe that every person Israeli which is healthy in his mind and his body should serve in the army, and to take place or take part in the struggle of Israel and to defend ourselves. We believe that we should not economically support those ultra-Orthodox groups which are not working, and we are supporting them from our taxes. And this is something that is appealing to the majority of Israelis, which are hardworking, serving in the army, and they do not want any other groups to be dependent on them.
If there is no change in the policy toward ultra-Orthodox and their sway in Israeli government, what future do you foresee for Israel?
I think that fundamentalism will prevail, and this is something that we are struggling against it. It is not only a matter of a problem in Israel, it is all over the world. We are opposing fundamentalistic views.
The Israeli Orthodox have been beneficiaries of government subsidies, but of course they're not the only ones. Israeli settlements in the West Bank and Gaza also have received subsidies. What's Shinui's stance on the settlements?
We believe that those illegal settlements should be dismantled immediately. With regard to the large settlements, which are legal, because the Gaza government has decided upon the settlements and they have been approved by the various governments, we believe it should be negotiated with the Palestinians during the negotiation about the Palestinian state and the peace process. But we believe that the end of the road, those settlements will be dismantled as well. Although we do not believe that large settlements, large blocks of settlements along the green line, which are the borders of Israel, mm-hmm. are going to be dismantled as well. So Shinui stands in the, if you say, in the political arena, we could say that we are standing in the middle. And we believe that the settlements should be part of the negotiation with moderate Palestinians, and the negotiation should proceed immediately.
Of course, there are powerful religious parties in Israel as well. How do you see the relationship between the struggle between secular and religious parties in Israel and the Israeli-Palestinian relationship? Is there a connection? Is one path or the other more likely to lead toward peace?
I would say that the strongest ultra-Orthodox party, which is Shas, which had 17 seats on the former Knesset, they are more to the right side of the political arena, which means they are against the peace process. So and on the left-hand side of the Israeli map, most of the people are secular people.
And presuming that either Likud or possibly Labor end up as the dominant party or the ruling party out of this election, which outcome does Shinui favor?
We are not taking part. We believe that because, as you know, now we are voting with one vote only, and we are going to vote for Shinui. Nevertheless, we believe that there should be a government formed by the two major parties, with Shinui as the third party in the coalition, because we believe that at this moment of time in the Israeli history, with regard to the political and economical status of Israel, there should be a unification of all Israeli forces to overcome these difficult times.
Yehudit Naot, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Yehudit Naot is a member of the Shinui Party in the Knesset. She spoke with us earlier from Haifa. Yaron Dekel, Washington Bureau Chief of Israeli TV Channel 1, there's the Shinui vote saying we simply want to have a greater secular influence, a lesser ultra-Orthodox influence.
Yeah, I can tell you that there are some Israelis who have a dream about a secular government, Likud, Labor Party, and Shinui, and kick the ultra-Orthodox out of the government.
Huh. Now there's a vision.
Yeah, but so far, in the last two decades at least, or more than that, no prime minister ever had the courage of ignoring the ultra-Orthodox parties, because they always think, our prime minister, the Israeli prime minister, they always think of the day after, politically.
Mm-hmm. What if I need them next time?
Yeah, since it's a coalition politics. When government breaking apart, the prime minister always needs the religious parties to try to form a different coalition without going to early elections.
Right.
And he can't afford ignoring them. None of the prime minister, including the Labour Party prime minister like Mr. Ehud Barak, they haven't ignored the ultra-Orthodox because of the day after. But if Sharon, if it's his last term, if he offers such a government to the Labour Party, it might cause a huge turmoil in the Labour Party after such a suggestion, when major activists, including maybe Mr. Shimon Peres, mm-hmm. might say,
let's
we
do
shouldn't
it.
Miss the chance of a secular government for the first time in the history of Israel.
And what would it mean in policy
Sharon
terms?
Sharon would do that.
What would it mean in policy terms, Yaron Dekel?
In policy terms, it will have to go back to a middle road between the Labour and the Likud. It's something like we had seen in the last 2 years. I can't see any resuming talks with Yasser Arafat or with the Palestinians, but it will be a major change in the political arena in Israel, because Israel has never had such a secular government. I doubt if Mr. Sharon does it when he's re-elected, if he's re-elected next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. He's quite a conservative. Mr. Sharon, at the age of 75, is quite a conservative.
But that tantalizing possibility is there.
Yeah, I think it might be a bit over the top, but if he makes such an offer, I believe that might be the change in the Labour Party. I'm not sure the Labour Party will split into two, but I'm sure it might cause a huge turmoil and a dispute in the Labour Party if to accept the offer or not.
Yaron Dekel, if you'll stand by, I want to turn to the phones just briefly. Zev's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Hello, Zev. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom and Yaron. Good evening.
Good evening.
I just want to make a quick comment concerning your previous caller, Mr. Herzog.
Yes.
Between the Labour Party being peace and Likud. I think it's very important to bring out the fact that the Likud Party made the first peace treaty with an enemy at the time and today a friend, and that is Egypt. Mm. The question is not whether which party wins. Whatever government, whatever Israeli government is chosen, will make peace. And we have shown that in the past, whether it's Labor or Likud. The big question is, who do we talk with? And I think that your listeners, Tom, mm-hmm. Many Americans across the United States can empathize with Israel in the fact. And take the example, for example, Iraq or Iran or even North Korea. Mm-hmm. How can the United States make peace with those countries when there is not a legitimate government on the other side to talk with?
So you're representing the views, Zev, that no matter who wins, that there's not a partner for peace here. Thank you for your call, Yaron Dekel, a common view.
Just a short comment. The difference between the distance between North Korea and the United States and between Iraq and the United States, it's completely different between the Israelis and the Palestinians sharing the same land and have to find a way to live side by side. It's a big, big difference.
So with that, and we just have a few seconds left, but can we anticipate any significant change in Israeli policy on the Palestinian front out of this election?
I will tell you in one sentence, it depends on President George W. Bush. If he forced or tried to push, like two previous presidents, one was senior President Bush, mm-hmm. trying to force into Madrid conference back in 1991 with Secretary of State James Baker. Mm-hmm. The other one was President Clinton, who tried to make a peace in Camp David between the Israelis and the Palestinians. It depends what position George W. Bush, the President of the United States, will take.
And
I think this is a question for American political analysts.
A vote in Israel, power in Washington. Yaron Dekel, thank you so much for joining us with your analysis tonight.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yaron Dekel is Washington Bureau Chief of Israeli TV, Channel 1. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR. We're funded.